Jason?
Yeah, just give me a quick update. No one is entering at the moment, but I will keep
Right.
trying.
Bunnings is open until 9 p.m. for what use that is.
Yes. Yeah, I'm aware.
In fact, actually, what day of the week is it?
It's Tuesday, from memory.
Oh, okay. No, they're open until 10 on Thursdays because Canberra still has its bizarre Thursday late night shopping thing, and big retailers still seem to adhere to it for some strange reason.
Yes.
I never understood why that was Thursday night instead of Friday. We're the only city that ever did that. Canberra.
No, Sydney did that as well.
On a Thursday night?
Yeah, it's actually the
No. See, it makes sense in Sydney, because in Sydney, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night, and even Monday night is already packed out by people anyway. So they actually wanted to encourage people to late night shop more. Thursday night actually makes sense in Sydney, in the CBD, but in a city like Canberra, when no one's coming out in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's pretty dead.
Not
pretty
so
dead
much. Because you realise Thursday late night shopping has been around since I was a kid in Canberra.
Yeah, same. Me too. You know,
okay, like you grew up. So I remember going at like 12 years old to the. Do you remember the old Grace Brothers?
Yeah, I remember Grace Brothers, yeah.
Do you remember the Grace Brothers store in Canberra, in Civic?
Vaguely remember, but I visited Grace Brothers.
We had one for a period back when Grace Brothers was really big. So I went there my parents took me there when I was about 12 years old for one of the Grace Brothers member nights, right? It was
I remember those.
Members
yeah,
only exclusive.
Pamphlet
and
in
it
the
was
mail,
on,
yeah.
It was on the Thursday night because it was late night shopping, but they were open till like midnight instead of like 10 p.m.
That's
and
right.
My high school art teacher, Mr. Bevan, who's a very talented musician, was actually there working as a magician on the evening.
Apparently,
even Trinity Christian School didn't pay enough for his lifestyle. So like that,
yeah,
or he just did that for
yeah,
fun. But like he was that talented. He was the magician that Grace Brothers back in the day hired to like entertain in store, and it's like, you know, exclusive.
Must have been
a
pretty good magician, yeah.
And so we went that night, and I needed new footy boots for soccer, and I was about to transition into doing like refereeing, and my dad found this pair of like top of the line like Adidas footy boots, which were normally like $300, and this is back in like the early 90s, $300, and they were on discount down to like $100 on this in total, on top of being cut and then the members exclusive and like, you know, a bunch of different things added together. And even that was still a lot of money for my parents, but they were like, okay, we're going to buy you these boots, like, you know, you better make them last forever. Thankfully, my feet had just about stopped growing at that point. I wore those boots on and off for the next like 15 years after that.
Yeah, wow. Member exclusive.
But yeah, Canberra's really changed a lot. And like Grace Brothers member exclusive, like because that was like being in a department store in Sydney on like an average Thursday night. You know, it was full, it was vibrant, there was people, there was entertainers, you know, like it wasn't boring for the kids. like the rest of Canberra, you're like, you know, you went out late night shopping anywhere else in Canberra, and like, geez, back in the 90s. Look, I remember I used to get the coach between Sydney and Melbourne many times back then when I was travelling around a lot when I was a teenager, and I used to often transit through Canberra at about 2 o'clock in the morning. I would go out and sit on the middle of Northbourne Avenue road lanes and smoke cigarettes for half an hour during the coach break, because back at that point you didn't even see a person walking around other than from the coach centre, let alone a vehicle that time of night. Like
yeah,
the
I remember
was
that
literally just
dead.
You remember that? It was like it was just entirely dead. Like the entire
it's
city
like
just
the zombie
shut down
apocalypse
at 9 p.m.
It already happened. Yeah, it already happened. Like at 9:05, everyone zombie apocalypse. If you see someone, you'd be shocked.
No bus services. No, not even any taxis or police or
no
emergency services. You wouldn't even hear a siren. And this isn't the freaking
taxi drivers
CBD.
Are asleep at home at 9:30. It's crazy.
Yeah.
They're sleeping.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, things have changed.
Like,
the tram,
Canberra is
trams
the same,
and everything.
But Canberra now, like, introducing Thursday late night shopping would maybe be just minimally viable for the first time ever in 2025 as, like, a post-COVID thing. But, like, back in the frickin', like, early 90s or 80s or whatever, like, you're kidding me.
Didn't have the population, no.
So, yeah, look, for
makes
what it's
sense.
Worth, they're open till 9 p.m. I'm not going to even try to go across there until after Sunday anyway myself, but...
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep trying. I knock off
look,
at 4:30, but I'm going to, I've
look,
sent
look,
him an email
look, I mean,
and the text.
Look, I emailed the stuff to Adele at midday. I didn't realise that she didn't even look at it until 3 hours later. At that point of the day, it seemed perfectly fair enough to be like, well, if Barbara's going to have time to meet with me this afternoon, and given like everything that's gone on in the harm and everything that's been caused, you know, like if I can't even manage to go and collect a, you know, thing from Bunnings, like, you know, with this and, you know, drop it off at my door, then like, you know, how can I have any faith in them being able to do anything else? All of which is far more bigger than like, you know, like that's just about like the most simplest task I ever have in my life whatsoever. Like go and pick this up with this bit of paper and bring it to me. Like,
yeah. And it's definitely a simple task, but I think it's more along the lines of I didn't think Barb was aware of it either, and she's got...
Look, I didn't even know until some point last week that you and Barbara, or even last week, and like the one that's just passed, that you and Barbara were even the same organisation.
Originally,
and then once I worked that out, I didn't even know what it was you did. So, as far as I was concerned, there wasn't any real difference between the two of you. I thought you might have actually been communicating with one another or something. I mean, like, you know, I say it like, you know, in a way that sounds illogical, but like a lot of how everyone else operates, it does seem illogical to me. But
we're going to communicate a lot more now, and she was very apologetic that it caused you distress, and she is pretty genuine, but I think she definitely jumped the gun and it's caused you. Yeah. And then Adele made it very clear that that's not the right way to go about it.
When I don't know what's going on in general, I mostly have to just ignore something and focus on what I can control or understand. Especially in these most extreme circumstances. Like, you know, magnified to a massive degree. Honestly, yeah. SimCity is the only thing that's keeping me sane at this point.
Thank God for SimCity. It won't be happening from us again, I can tell you that. The only time that I'll ever approve any police going to your house is if, you know, you said you were going to harm yourself kill yourself.
Let's just not talk about it at all, because I've had mandatory reporting weaponized against me, and the fact is mandatory reporting is bullshit, because there's mandatory reporting for suspected child abuse as well. But, like, report for supposed welfare risk at, like, 500 times the willingness and readiness that they ever do for fucking mandatory reporting for suspected child abuse. And given the fact that in reality, about 5 to 10% of all Australians are frickin' pedophiles, or at least groom underage children for them, there should be hundreds of mandatory child abuse reports being made every day. But there aren't, because the thing is, mandatory reporting is a gigantic fucking joke. And some people take it way more seriously than it's ever intended to, and other people just treat it, you know, entirely frivolously, and then you get all kinds of the spectrum in between. Like, you know, there's no consistency with it whatsoever, and the fact is, most of the people that the police come out to are the people the least likely to respond well to the police fucking cat team in the first place.
Because the cat team is just the cat team.
They just rebranded themselves because the cat team brand had become so toxic over so many decades everywhere in Australia. Like, I mean, like, you know, there's tons of acronyms that people come up with over time. Caution, active threat, cat team approaching. You know, like, you know, in the public housing block, like, you know, I used to live out, people used to ring bells and bang pot pans whenever the cat or the police walked onto the premises, because both were just as dangerous to the residents there as everyone else. You know, like, it was like the friggin', like, you know, like Wild West, but like the Wild West of like modern fucking, you know, ghetto apartment housing. Like,
yeah, I grew up in housing too. I remember the pots and stuff being bashed when they rocked up. So,
wow. Yeah, okay. It's a long time since I've come across as anyone actually any genuine lived experience. And like a lot of things I say, that no intended criticism in saying that. I'm just trying to make a factual statement. But
I grew up in Claymore. You look it up on Google.
That's Victoria, isn't it?
No, it's just a Wales, southwest Sydney, so it's...
Where in Sydney? I know Sydney extremely well. I don't know Claymore, but is it what's the biggest...
Campbelltown.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I grew up in Claymore in the 90s. And then,
How far away were you from... I'm blanking on the name of the suburb.
5T?
The suburb that no one ever wanted to go to, where all the wogs lived, where the Arabs lived, to put Bankstown? It in a really crude, blunt way, like someone would have backed
down.
No, worse than Bankstown. Cabramatta.
Cabramatta. I was probably like 45 minutes away from Cabramatta, but Claymore was way worse than Cabramatta.
Really?
Cabramatta just got a lot of the headline.
When I was 15 years old, I was working full-time in a call centre in the city, and one of the guys I was working with and became friends with lived in Cabramatta. I actually went back out and hung out at his house for a day back at the time. And I wouldn't have gone anywhere if I wasn't with him the entire time. And it was like
Cabramatta is like the Bellagio
compared to Claymore. In some way, it didn't entirely deserve the reputation it did, but it freaking mostly did.
That was the Bellagio compared to Claymore.
Okay, look, I'll have to take your word for it, but I also spent
I also spent
a number of years on the streets of King's Cross between the ages of like 15 and 19. So,
you know what? You and I would have been there at the same time, to be honest.
In Sydney?
Yeah, at the King's Cross. So Porky's and all that, and all the gangs and bouncers up there. So I used to.
Were you at any of the gay venues?
The one on Oxford Street on the left-hand side.
That was just because that was where I was safest, and no one ever asked me for ID back then.
We used to go to a lot of the gay bars because the drinks were so cheap there as well. Like, your drinks would be like $4.50.
Okay, the cafe in King's Cross, and no, I'm not going to specify because if as familiar as I am with it, there's only one cafe, hopefully, that you could possibly think of that I'll be referring to.
Mm.
On the side street, just off the main strip, the one where you can buy weed at.
Yeah, down where the stairs are. Yes, I know exactly the one you're talking about.
Okay. So
it's been a very long time since I've actually come across anyone
from any of my early stomping grounds.
Yeah, I used to hang out at King's Cross, used to go into the city, used to hang out at George Street a lot at the time zone there on George Street, if you remember it.
So you knew where the wall was, right?
Yeah, I knew where the wall was.
Okay, you know that tree in Taylor Square by the toilet block that they eventually cut down?
Yeah.
Do you remember hearing about a guy climbing up it and sitting in it for a day and then being arrested by the police to try and stop Clovermore eventually cutting it down?
No, I didn't hear about that, but I heard about people trying to like surround it to stop her from cutting it down.
I occupied that tree for a day as a last vain protest to try and stop it being cut down after it had already been surrounded by construction fencing. It failed, but it earned me a two-page article in the Sydney Star Observer back in the day. It's the only media that covered it, unfortunately, but they covered it.
I can't believe that anyone
like,
covered
they
it.
They covered it
yeah.
like... Better than any mainstream journalist possibly could have.
Jeez.
It was an inside two-page spread. Like you know,
you
like,
tried to
you
stop
know, this
the
is,
toxic
you know, this
rot
is the main
from
news
Clovermore.
Of the
well, basically, it was the early days of the Clovermore rot. So I'm glad you tried to stop it because she's just gone power crazy up in Sydney. And
well, this would have been
early
2001, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say early 2000s because she got voted in after Bob Carr left. And she's been in charge of...
Well, late 2000s, early 2000s, yeah, sometime around
Yeah, remember
then,
when Bob Carr stepped down and he went to New South Wales?
Just be careful
Carly?
Talking
yeah.
about Carr, remember, because my biggest pedophile abuser was Michael Egan, who was in Carr's government and the leader of the Upper House and his treasurer, and it was Paul O'Grady that my father dated.
Got it. Yeah, I hate those guys.
But yeah, I know Sydney extremely well. Like, heck, I was in New South Wales schools in Parliament from Dover Heights High.
Oh, Dover Heights. Yeah, I know Dover Heights. Yeah, I used to live.
I moved with my dad.
In COVID, I moved
to Sydney
to
from
Point.
Canberra after I finished Year 10 here in class of 97, and then I was in Sydney from like November or December 97 onwards. And I did half of Year 11 at Dover Heights High, and Centrelink thinks I completed Year 11 and part of Year 12. But by that point, I was living up at a forest blockade in Kimbara in northern New South Wales.
Yeah, I understand. I lived in Cremorne Point during COVID in a studio apartment.
Well, the problem was when I was 16, I was working 30 hours a week at KFC Bondi Junction. As their
Oh, you're KFC too?
Yeah,
oh,
almost
KFC,
as
Woodbine.
Their almost full-time hours, non-Monday to Friday hours cooked. So I did all the weekend shifts, all the night shifts. So I'd work until 3 o'clock in the morning. I was getting excellent
you
marks
have to
in
clean
class,
a KFC.
But I never had...
But
I never had any time to do my homework ever, and so much of the HSC relies on out-of-class work, so I was getting 0% on all my out-of-class work, but getting like 90 to 100% on all my in-class work, and after like 9 months of that, I was like, there's no point in me continuing, I'm just going to completely fuck up and get the most shocking SAT score ever that I don't even fucking deserve.
It's funny that you and I both worked at Bondi Junction.
Really? Do you remember Kimberly Davies coming in every Sunday to the KFC to get her to get the family feast meal?
No, because I didn't work at the KFC at Bondi. I worked at the Build-A-Bear.
No, but in Bondi Junction back in the day, that was a real spectacle because she would turn up around 1 p.m. every Sunday because she lived just up in Vaucluse Heights. Hold on 1 second, I just let my cat in. Yeah, she lived just up in Vaucluse, just on the other side of Dover Heights, and every Sunday she would drive down in person around 1 p.m. and line up in person. And this is back when she was like super famous from Home and Away or whatever it was.
Oh, super famous! She
and
never
and like everyone
in Bondi,
like people would come and like queue up outside the store and watch her buy. And every Sunday
Jason.
She would turn up
you
and
know
buy
that?
The family feast, the roast chicken, the two large chips, the two large drinks, the large potato,
the family meals,
the large
roast,
coleslaw,
roast
et cetera, like.
Yeah. You know, she married a Jason, because my name's Jason. That's the only reason I know that.
Oh, okay, rightio. Which is, it was my roast chicken that she was eating for like 2 years
oh, really?
When I was the full-time weekend cook. She kept turning, because I swear, I don't know how often she came there before I started working there, but I swear she only started there coming there consistently every single Sunday after I started working there and after I was the one cooking the Sunday roast chickens every single Sunday and every single Saturday as well and every night of the week.
Well, you do good chicken, people
don't. Well, actually,
come.
We didn't do roast chickens really at night. You only really did them in the morning, so I only did them on the weekends. But, yeah, it was my roast chicken Kimberly Davies used to turn up for.
Well, there you go. You powered her nutrition to become super famous.
And then do you remember? No. This is after she
is this after
doing much. She was already famous by that point.
She was on Neighbours for a long time.
No, because she was living in America for a long time, wasn't she? And then she'd moved back to Australia and she'd got the place up in Vaucluse. But she'd only been there for a few years, I think. I don't think she'd been there for a long time.
No, I remember from coming from America. Yeah, I don't think she was there for a long time.
She'd either been overseas or she'd been in Sydney or something like that.
I definitely remember her coming from America.
I mean, Melbourne or something like that before then. Or Brisbane, I don't know.
I remember something about her coming from America, but that's such a long time ago.
You remember
Chris.
Captain Snooze?
You're killing my brain. You're killing my brain.
You remember Captain Snooze, right? Rod McQuantick?
Yeah, McQuantick, yeah.
You know how he got heaps into protesting after he stopped being Captain Snooze, right?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, well, he did. Well, do you remember at that KFC in Bondi Junction, there was that really narrow road lane, one way only, with the traffic parked on the side that you had to, that was actually at the store side entrance because we were just over from the mall itself?
Yeah, I remember the one lane thing. Yeah,
okay,
and everyone used to double park there.
So one Saturday, Rod McQuantock drove two, rented coaches up that one lane thing and parked them both outside the KFC store and exited with like 150 geriatric like 60, 70, 80 year olds, like clearly like he just emptied a couple of old people's homes. They all piled in and conducted the most politest protest sit-in I've ever seen in my entire life for 2 hours to protest against KFC back in the day against what I don't even remember, but like it was the whole thing. They occupied the whole store. The police turned up and they're just like, we don't know what to do. Like, there's no way we're dragging out, like, all these old people
60,
in 70
or 80 year olds
sitting there politely, you know, like, serving them free tea and coffee.
I would have started offering them chicken. That's what I would have done. I'm like, you guys hungry? You want to buy it?
They actually weren't that hungry, but we handed out endless free cups of tea and coffee, which they got anyway with their fucking seniors card. But like, it was the most bizarre, surreal thing ever. Like, I've never seen anything like it in my life. And the problem is that because their two coaches are blocked off the laneway, even the police couldn't get anywhere near.
They couldn't
get
in.
They all had to walk in.
Jeez, it would have been a squeeze getting those coaches
like,
in that tiny little laneway.
Fucking like 4-star fucking police commander on duty that day in Bondi Police Station ended up fucking wandering over, like Bondi Junction Station ended up wandering over to check out what was going on just because like there wasn't much else going on. By that point there was a huge like the police spent the afternoon more on crowd control or controlling everyone around the restaurant and they couldn't get
around
to
it,
see.
Yeah.
Like
that would have affected the sales, that's for sure. You couldn't sell any chicken.
That's like not even 0.01% of the interesting stories I have, the amount of bizarre shit that I've seen in my life. Like
it's funny that we've been to the same areas and similar backgrounds as well. So that's I encourage you to look up Claymore. I'm going to try and follow up these
well,
guys.
You know,
to see if
you know, do you know Diceyville then, yeah?
Diceyville?
Or should I say Diceyville?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's the smallest suburb in Sydney and in Australia, actually. It's bizarre that I got stuck in youth housing for about a year or so before I ended up absconding north to the forest blockade.
The only way I remember it is because I'm a big nut on trivia. So, like, my brain remembers things weirdly. So,
no,
Stairway to Heaven.
Diceyville called it Diceyville because it was dicey as fuck, so everyone called it Diceyville. The police drove down.
I only remember that it was 7Ks long. That's it, because I remember the trivia, because Stairway to Heaven.
I don't know if it was 7Ks long, but it was just one long main street.
I think it's 7Ks, yeah.
With housing on either side, and the police used to drive down that main street every half an hour. Like religiously every day, all day long, 7 days a week.
Not as bad as that street in Redfern. Like, I went with my uncle to try and deliver a parcel. Fuck, I forget the name of it.
No, it was
a
whole bunch
of
white shithead criminals there instead of black shithead criminals, basically.
It was crazy. Like, we tried to go down that street that was always on the news in Redfern to deliver a parcel. And as soon as I went down there, like, people just started throwing shit out of our car and stuff like that, and we had to reverse. The cops wouldn't even go down that street.
See, funnily enough, I could walk into Redfern quite safely as a teenager, and I did even at night time, but Cabramatta was a very different story. As a white person in Sydney, I was actually far more safer in black areas than I was in white areas, funnily enough.
Yeah, that is funny. But, yeah, all right, well, let me chase this up. I knock off now, but I've sent him a text and an email, and I forwarded the provider the email for the Bunnings slip as well, so they could go in. But they haven't called me back, so I'm trying my hardest, but...
For what it's worth, I eventually ended up discovering how I could make tunnels with highways, and that changed everything. And at that point, I scrapped the series I've been doing and realized I've been doing things wrong. And then I actually looked up a bunch of guides and I've downloaded some mods at this point. I've also realized that my entire strategy has been completely wrong and I've been focusing on the wrong things in the wrong way. And so I've started all over again and I'm kind of trying to relearn the game now with what I know. And it's, like, interesting. Good.
Send me through the screenshots of your new developments, yeah, because I'm interested to see.
At this point, I've ditched the advice of starting out with just a dirt road from your main avenue entrance. And I've spent, this city has invested about $30,000 or $35,000 in nothing but but a single high density spine all the way in.
That's what I do. I do the high density spine. Yeah, that's exactly what I do to go in.
The early videos I watch were all, and I don't even like getting game tips or anything from videos anyway, if I can avoid it. We're all like, you're brand new to the game. The stuff I've ended up looking at were the guides from the people who were like cranking the leaderboards when there was the online play and were building like gigantic cities of nothing but CPU processes and industry and all that kind of, you know, crazy shit.
Oh, yeah,
so,
that kind of junk,
yeah, so I got more high-level advice on, like, this is how you build a city sensibly from the start when you're going to build a proper, you know, city. So they're not fucking around with, like, dirt roads from the main avenue entrance. You know, they're just laying down.
Nah, then you get traffic issues, then you get the fire issues, and then, yeah, then they...
And that's the thing. My cities kept cratering out once they got to a certain growth point. Because I hadn't because I was never accounting for traffic, amongst other things. But from the beginning, I'd been mixing up density and wealth in a really bad way, because they were very different in the very original version of SimCity, which is all I'd ever played before. So it took me a long time just to get my head around the fact that the indicator thing in the game was wealth, not density, and I wasn't paying attention to the wealth map at all back then. These days, it's probably about the number one overlay map I use, all the time.
100%, because wealth, they're going to build, they're going to knock down, rebuild, boot deep, dead collectors.
At this point, I'm no longer laying down RCI on all sides of the road grid.
Are you not doing
it
both sides?
I'm only laying
it
down
on
single sides of four-way grids according to the densities and stuff. Like, that's where
that
I'm
makes
at
sense.
This point.
That makes sense. And maybe you could do commercial on the other side.
No, it's not about that. It's that if you actually want to have a four-sided thing for the full high-density width, you'd have to have a very large single round road bounded area, and then you'd also have a square left cut out in each corner that wouldn't get filled
with
anything.
That's what frustrates
there.
Me. Yeah, that's what frustrates
and you'd
me.
Also
square
then
in
have,
the corner, yeah.
You'd also then have depth left in the middle. So what I'm doing is drawing by the road guides, but I'm only laying down on one of the four interior road areas to actually zone, and so they're taking up the full width from that side only.
That's actually a good idea.
Or when I start with low density, because the high density buildings are the same size as the medium density buildings, they're just taller. So if you lay down according to the road guides, then you can zone on two sides opposite each other, and the low density buildings will establish back to back. But then when you upgrade the road to medium density, you need to kill the zoning on one side so that the buildings on the other side can then take up the full density. Yeah.
Correct. And you demolish houses, and then their happiness goes down.
Yeah, like at this point, I ended up printing out a map, and before I started this new thing, I did a complex, like, you know, thing on the map of, like, how I wanted to lay things out, and I played through a game on that and realised I spent too much. I'd gone overboard on the avenues at the start, and I was growing too slowly, and there were some other layout issues that I'd run into, so then I'd scrapped and started all over again, and now I'm kind of playing a bit more freeform, but I'm still starting with, like, the 35 grand in avenue that I laid out before doing anything else in the game. So it does kind of make... It does force you to slow down and baby... the thing more from the start, but that's actually good, really. I think I was rushing through the game a bit too much.
100%. Build those sort of foundations, and then you won't crater out when you start to get the huge population.
Honestly, that's been the only thing keeping me sane at this point. And
just keep at it. Just do it, then, if it's helping you. Whatever helps at this stage, until we can get all this pressure taken off you. So I'm going to try and do that now by trying to ring the bloody
really
survivors.
I really hope that you can find someone who can just get that.
Just take the stress off tonight.
This afternoon, because right now I really don't want to have to leave the house to try and get that, but at the same time I don't.
No.
Like
best case scenario
I've got some backup emergency stuff, but the problem is the cats aren't going to want to eat it, and they'll just fuss all night long until they've got their food again. Right. And I just leave it till the morning, I run the risk of having a sleepless, difficult, you know, like night with the cats and.
I get it. That's why I've left a message. I've texted them and emailed them. So let me try and follow up again.
The problem is I don't know what to do with so many things anymore, so I just ignore it and open up SimCity whenever I'm not too depressed to play it entirely, which is half of the time still. And
Jump on now while I follow these guys up.
Yeah, okay.
And then send me some screenshots.
Anyway. I sent you through some emails just for additional context. So that's like not even 10% of the stuff that I've... been trying to do with over the past week instead,
I'll go through that and I appreciate the update. I really
it's
do.
Just the same stuff I threw to Del this afternoon to try and catch her up, because I didn't want her to arrive to like 38 unread emails from me. There were already half a dozen as there were.
I appreciate the context, and I will go through them. So I want to, I want to be across everything. So
well, this
let me ring these guys down.
This desk phone is directly next to my monitor. Like 40 centimetres away from where I sit at the computer. Now the desktop's set back up again. I largely kind of live at my computer when I'm not doing chores or I'm out of the house. So,
now, is it okay if I give, when Emily does call me back, is it okay if I give her this number to call you on?
If you need, but you have in the email everything that is needed to collect, and
it could just be left
on the black chair under the window, which is directly to the right of the purple board.
Let me write it down.
Sorry, this is just, like, it's quite obvious when you get here, but this is just, like, my setup drop-off spot anyway.
Yeah, okay, black chair.
So black chair under the window.
Yep.
Under to the right-hand side of the purple board, which is covering up my front door.
Right.
It's just cheap MDF that I spray-painted purple.
Yeah, no, all good.
But it's what you would otherwise describe as my front door. So just immediately to the right of the front door, there's a black chair facing the wall, just under the window, just under the black chairs.
They can't miss
it. Like waterproof cat tent thing for them to hide in if they ever get stuck out outside, because that's one of the places I let them in and out. If you leave something on there, then I can actually reach through the window and depending on how big it is and pull it in without even having to go out of the house is the other thing. If they need to call me, that's fine, but technically they don't actually
need to. Technically they don't need to call me,
yeah.
That makes sense. All right, let me follow up now for you.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay, bye.